There's a million things to stress about when flying. Overweight luggage, TSA lines, delays, overpriced airport lunches. Your rental car shouldn't be one of them. With Avis First, your rental comes with a personal concierge who meets you at arrivals, hands you the keys to a premium car, and refills it for you at market price when you're done. You've rented before, but trust me when I say you've never rented quite like this. Welcome to Avis First. Visit avis.com to learn more.
Hey moms, it's Mandy here, mom of two wild, wonderful teenage boys who both just wrapped up their braces journey with Shirk Orthodontics. And let me tell you, their smiles are absolutely stunning. But what made me really fall in love with Shirk Orthodontics wasn't just the results. It was how easy they made the whole process for me as a busy mom. Best part, other than five convenient locations, is they offer a free exam. Go online and book today at yoursmilemaker.com.
Mention code BACKTOSCHOOLSMILE at your new patient exam and receive clear ceramic braces valued at $450. Free.
Everyone is welcome at the Big Table on Tuesday, October 21st. All across Central Ohio, people will join together to discuss important topics affecting our region. Don't miss your chance to be part of this community-wide day of inspiring conversations. Visit columbusfoundation.org to learn more about how you can participate. Together, we can inspire a culture of connection and kindness, one conversation at a time.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
What's the darkest confession you've ever kept hidden from everyone? Story 1. I am an escort who lives in a place where this profession is legal, and lately I have been reflecting on how people see what I do and how that perception affects me. Recently, while reading a comment online, I felt awful because it said that most women would never date a man who had been with an escort. It made me feel like society views people in my profession as less than human, as objects, which unfortunately I have become used to. At one point, I even thought of making a post admitting that I am an escort, just to see whether I truly had become desensitized to all the insulting names people use. What I do is so much more than what outsiders think. I have helped many clients struggling with anxiety, loneliness, depression, and emptiness. It has even been shown that areas with access to workers in this profession have lower rates of suicide and violence. At times, I feel like a therapist because I really listen to these men and their struggles. And it hurts when people reduce my work to stereotypes, calling people like me offensive names, or assuming we are all addicts or damaged. The only stereotype that I will admit to is that I have identified myself as being addicted to intimacy. Yes, some clients come to me because of things they feel they cannot find in their relationships, but often I have ended up giving them advice on how to reconnect and rebuild what they already have. Through all of this, I have noticed that the way I see men in relationships has changed completely. I used to be a jealous and controlling partner. Because I am introverted, when I connected with someone, I would pour all my energy into them and cling out of fear of losing them. Eventually, I chose to be alone and work on myself. And now, as a single provider, I see relationships differently. To me, they often look like ticking clocks, waiting to run down into boredom, distance, resentment, and eventual heartbreak. I have also become more jaded and sometimes find it hard to trust men. I know it is unfair to generalize, but I have met many who sneak around instead of being honest with their partners. Even though this is my work, I still root for them to heal their relationships so they no longer need me. Still, I fear that being in this profession has affected my ability to believe in love and honesty. There are times I have no one to talk to, and certain encounters leave me feeling drained because of the heavy, dark energy I absorb from some clients. That is part of why I am sharing this confession. I know I am rambling, and there is so much more I could say, but what I keep realizing is that in this work, there is never just one way of seeing things. I am always contradicting myself about how I feel. In the end, though, I do enjoy what I do. I like making people happy, easing their struggles, and supporting their mental health, even if society frowns upon my path. Story 2. I was 26 years old, 25 at the time this happened. working my retail job when I met a girl while helping her at the counter. Our small talk drifted into films and cinema, which I am a big fan of, and it turned out she was too. After I finished ringing up her items, we exchanged numbers, and she quickly texted me a list of films she personally recommended. As I went through them, I shared my thoughts and kept the conversation going. With each exchange, we learned more about each other, and it became clear we had a real connection. Still, in the background, I was quietly concerned about her age. I look younger than I am, and living in a college town means many of the women I meet are students just starting out in adulthood, and I was not comfortable with the idea of dating someone so young. My coworker, who is 23, reassured me that this girl looked older than them, so I was probably fine. I could have asked her age much earlier, but somewhere along the way, I had been taught that it was impolite to ask a woman her age, and I held on to that. Instead, I asked questions about her life to piece together clues, and when she mentioned she had been working in the trades for 5 years, I felt more relaxed. Before long, she suggested we go out for coffee, which I happily agreed to. The night before our date, we were talking on the phone, and I casually brought up my own age so she would know I was 25. Her only response was surprise, saying she thought I was 22. The next day, we met for coffee and spent time wandering around the city, talking and enjoying each other's company. Everything was going well until, near the end, I finally decided to ask directly how old she was. She answered, "I am 18. And before I could even process that, she added, "Well, basically 18. That was when my stomach dropped. Her 18th birthday was 2 weeks away, while mine, my 26th, was 1 week out. The realization sent me into a quiet panic. She seemed to realize she had just dropped a huge shock on me and immediately apologized for not mentioning it earlier. She tried to reassure me by saying she was comfortable with the age gap and that in her family there were couples with even bigger differences. I stayed calm in the moment, listened, and tried to be understanding. The date ended soon after, and we went our separate ways. I told her I would not just disappear, but now it has been nearly 2 months and neither of us has reached out. I cannot bring myself to, because I am still stuck between feeling hurt that she withheld something so important, even if it was not intentional, and feeling disgusted with myself for the emotions I had before learning her real age. Writing this out feels like a way to get it off my chest so I can finally move on. Story 3. This happened a few years ago, and the ages were accurate for that time. I was 35 years old, and my wife was 40 when it began. We had been together for 7.5 years and married for 1.5. For the first 6 years, I was loyal, hardworking, and completely dedicated. Early on, about 2 years into our relationship, I was between jobs and needed welfare for 2 months. During that time, I searched for work daily and kept busy at home cooking and cleaning while my wife was at her job. Once I found steady employment again, it was an overnight job, which meant we did not see each other often. I used public transit while she drove. Every couple of months, regardless of my work schedule, she would sit me down and tell me not to cheat on her. The first time it happened, I felt sympathy, realizing she must have been hurt in the past. The second time, I smiled and reassured her that I was faithful. By the third time, I felt annoyed, as I was always responsive to her messages and accountable for my time. It began to feel like I was constantly being accused of something I had never done or even considered doing. By the sixth year of our relationship, I had a new 9-to-5 job, which somehow seemed to upset her even more. She hated when I talked about work at home and stopped appreciating my sense of humor or anything I found interesting. If I asked what was wrong, she would reply with, "What do you think I'm upset about?" Or, "I'm not upset. Are you feeling guilty about something?" She frequently accused me of cheating, despite my transparency. I had no real friends because she disliked me going out. I often invited her to join, and she only came once, afterwards saying she hated my friends. I hated how small and guilty she made me feel for simply trying to have friends, trying to support us, and trying to keep the relationship alive. I am not always socially aware, so sometimes I would not notice what bothered people until it became obvious through their anger. But I never received real answers, only deflections. Then a new coworker, who I will call Kelly, started at my workplace. She made me feel alive in a way I cannot fully describe. She laughed at my jokes, cared about what I said, and had an amazing taste in music. She was not as familiar with internet culture, but that only gave us more differences to explore. I later learned she had been flirting with me, but things like that often went over my head due to low self-esteem. Eventually, as you might expect, we began an affair that lasted a little over a year and overlapped my wedding. I did not do it out of revenge or anger. I could say she punished me ahead of time, so I might as well deserve it. But I am not that petty. I could have said, forget her, I will just look out for myself. But I am not that bitter. The truth is, I did it because Kelly made me feel truly loved, and I loved how I felt around her. My wife eventually found out after going through my phone and discovering texts. I never admitted to the affair, but she was convinced. When she screamed and even lashed out physically, I felt nothing. No sadness, no anger, just emptiness. The affair ended, as I always knew it would. I never thought it was forever, but it opened my eyes. For the first time, someone made me feel valued, and I realized I deserve better. That feeling is what I now believe love is supposed to be. Something I had never experienced before, and have not since. Nobody in my life knows this story. I always kept people at a distance. Even my family was shocked when we divorced, but we were never that close. Since then, every relationship I have had has been open, something I am upfront about from the start. Kelly and I no longer talk. She married someone else, and although I never liked how he treated her, I did not want to be the reason her marriage ended. After she got engaged, I found another job. Eventually, she blocked my number after I missed one of her calls while on a date. I explained, but it did not matter. Part of me selfishly wanted her to choose me, but she did not. Accepting that reality is something I had no choice but to do. Story 4. I have been married to my wife for 12 years, and together we have...
Hey moms, it's Mandy here, mom of two wild, wonderful teenage boys who both just wrapped up their braces journey with Shirk Orthodontics. And let me tell you, their smiles are absolutely stunning. But what made me really fall in love with Shirk Orthodontics wasn't just the results. It was how easy they made the whole process for me as a busy mom. Best part, other than 5 convenient locations, is they offer a free exam. Go online and book today at yoursmilemaker.com.
Mention code BACKTOSCHOOLSMILE at your new patient exam and receive clear ceramic braces valued at $450 free.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
4 children. Throughout our marriage, I have remained faithful, and to the best of my knowledge, so has she. I was always the person who looked down on people who cheated, shaking my head and thinking, shame on you. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I would become the other man. For about a year, I had been casually flirting with a woman at work, always assuming it was harmless playfulness. But 2 weeks ago, things changed dramatically. One evening, we were the last 2 people left in the office, preparing to close for the night. We were joking and exchanging flirty comments when she made a remark about my lips. I responded with a playful comment about hers, and before I knew it, she was close to me. I leaned in, and we started kissing. Things escalated quickly, and we ended up crossing a line right there in the break room. To my surprise, she was much more passionate and skilled than I had ever expected. I thought guilt or fear of being caught would hit us immediately afterward. After all, she is married too. But that feeling never came. In fact, we repeated the same thing twice more in the week since. I had always believed that the fear of shame was what kept me faithful, and I loved my wife deeply. But intimacy at home had not been perfect, and I also had my own unmet needs. Still, I thought breaking that boundary would leave me devastated with guilt. Instead, I felt none of it. If anything, I have been in a better mood than usual. Oddly enough, I feel a sense of pride, like I have stepped into a new part of my life by experiencing intimacy with someone outside my marriage. At home, nothing feels different on the surface. My wife and I still spend time together, still take care of our kids, and still share our own moments. Yet I know that if she discovered the truth, it would crush her. What surprises me most is not that I crossed the line, but that the shame I always expected has never arrived. Instead, I find myself strangely glad that I let things happen, and even more surprised by how I feel about it. Story 5. I was 8 weeks pregnant, having found out at 6. From the moment I told my partner, everything changed. He became vicious. I wanted time to think through my options, but he immediately turned hostile, as if my decision was an attack on him. At first, he thought I was joking, assuming the pregnancy test was fake. Then, without any compassion, he started calling clinics while making cruel remarks, joking about whether I would schedule the procedure or saying he couldn't wait to throw an unbaby shower. His words were relentless and cutting. One night, he smashed my dishes, claiming he was too stressed by my indecision. Holding a broken plate, he accused me of playing with his life and even said, "Every second of your pregnancy feels like a violation of me because I didn't consent to this." He threatened to sue me for custody and child support if I kept the baby, insisting we would be stuck together for 18 years. He sarcastically suggested I was trying to force him into marriage, which only made him angrier when I told him I would never marry someone like him. For those 2 weeks, from 6 to 8, I wasn't allowed to feel any joy, only fear. The stress and anxiety consumed me, causing daily panic attacks and nervous breakdowns. I could barely eat, surviving on strawberry frosted pastries. Then the night he smashed the dishes, I started spotting. The next day I went to the clinic alone, took the medication alone, and went through the process alone. I could not do it anymore. He won. The medication was agonizing. Full body contractions, vomiting, tears, and unbearable pain. Even with what I had been given to ease it, I hated every second, but I knew I could not tie myself to him for the rest of my life. It's over now. The pain is still with me, but deep down I know it was for the best, because I would never want him to be the father of my children. Still, my heart is broken that it had to happen this way. Later that night, while I was in the bathroom, lying in the tub trying to cope, he barged in and screamed at me for 10 minutes about the broken dishwasher. Not about me, not about what I was going through, but about an appliance. When I looked at him and asked, "Are you really yelling at me while I'm going through this?" He froze, left, and slammed the door. My therapist later told me that this moment was not minor, that I should be deeply alarmed by how he acted. Now I'm back at work because someone has to cover the bills. My management has been supportive, but a couple of younger coworkers have made cutting remarks, pulling me aside to scold me for leaving early once, without knowing anything about what I have endured. A part of me wants to release all this grief and show them how wrong they are, but I hold it in. Protecting my privacy and my peace feels more important than engaging in their games. Still, I am exhausted, traumatized, and frustrated. Ironically, now he refuses to leave me alone, clingy, demanding, and talking about trying again in a few months as if nothing happened. I just need space to process and heal. I am barely holding it together, but I am still showing up to work, meeting my goals, and that small piece of normalcy helps me keep going, even when it feels like nothing I do will ever be enough. Writing this here is the only way I can release some of it, since I cannot share this with anyone in real life. I just needed to tell someone, because I don't know how to make it stop. Story 6. I only have a few weeks left to live, and my partner makes me feel like it is somehow my fault. I do not even know where to begin. 2 months ago, I was told I have terminal cancer. At first, the doctor said I might have a few months, but now it looks more like just weeks. I am only 29 years old, and I never imagined my life would end like this. When I first got the diagnosis, I believed my boyfriend would be there for me. We have been together for 4 years, and although our relationship has not been perfect, I truly thought he loved me. In the beginning, he seemed supportive. He came with me to the hospital and told me we would face it together. But that reassurance did not last. As the days passed, his patience wore thin. Now he snaps at me for being too tired to cook or clean, telling me things like, "You can't just give up on life because you're sick." A few nights ago, I asked him to sit with me while I tried to sleep, because the panic attacks at night have become unbearable. He rolled his eyes and said, "Do you know how exhausting it is to deal with this every single day? You're not the only one who's suffering." Those words cut deeper than I can explain. I already feel trapped inside a body that is failing me, and instead of comfort, I get blame. I feel stuck. My strength is fading, and the one person I thought I could rely on makes me feel like I do not deserve kindness in my final days. I want to leave, but where would I go? I do not have the energy to face this alone, and the idea of spending my last weeks in a hospice surrounded by strangers terrifies me. What hurts the most is how detached he has become. When I cry, he walks away. When I try to share my fears, he dismisses me with, "I don't know what you want me to say. It's not like I can fix this." It feels like he has already checked out, just waiting for me to be gone so he no longer has to deal with me. I do not even know why I am sharing this. Maybe I just need someone to tell me I am not crazy for feeling abandoned in my most vulnerable moment. I do not want to spend what little time I have left like this, lonely, scared, and made to feel like a burden by the person I trusted most. Story 7. I am 39 years old and the younger of two brothers. My older brother, Henry, is 41. Growing up, Henry was always the golden child who could do no wrong. When he got bad grades, my parents encouraged and supported him. But if I brought home a score that was decent, I was met with disappointment. For his high school graduation, he received a new car and a big party, while mine was marked with $500 and a pat on the back. Henry was not a bad brother, but we mostly lived separate lives. After high school, I moved away to college, earned my MBA in 5 years, and eventually returned to my home city for work. My contact with the family was minimal outside of birthdays and holidays. Meanwhile, Henry barely got through high school, dropped out of college, and was set up with a small hardware shop funded by my parents. Around this time, I met Jenny, my girlfriend then, who later became my wife. We moved in together and she quickly found a job too. In 2006, I introduced Jenny to my family, and surprisingly, they welcomed her warmly. For once, I felt loved. During that visit, I noticed Henry watching her a lot, but I brushed it off. Soon after, Henry began visiting our apartment almost daily, disrupting our evenings. I eventually asked him to give us space, which led to a fight with my parents. Though Henry later apologized and reduced his visits, his interest in Jenny was clear. In 2009, I proposed to Jenny. At our engagement party, my parents were happy, but Henry shook my hand and left without a word. We married in 2010, and Henry attended with a new partner, Kate. I thought he had finally moved on, but within a year, Henry married Kate, only for their marriage to fall apart in 2012. Kate later messaged me, revealing Henry's obsession with Jenny as the reason for their separation. I confronted Henry in front of the family, and though he denied it, I told him he was no longer welcome in my home. My parents and Jenny eventually persuaded me to keep things amicable. In 2015, everything fell apart. On July 25th, I received a call from my father demanding I come home. When I arrived, Jenny was sobbing, my parents were furious, and extended family was present. They accused me of something horrible involving a woman named Amanda, a girl I knew from high school. Amanda claimed I assaulted her after a party and produced fabricated text messages as evidence. My father slapped me, my parents disowned me, and Jenny ended our marriage that day. Henry shared the supposed evidence with the entire family, who immediately cut ties with me. In the following weeks, I lost everything: my job, my friends, my reputation, and my marriage. By August, I received formal divorce papers and a letter of disownment. My father collected Jenny and the kids' belongings from my apartment, and Henry even physically attacked me. I was left with nothing. For months, I spiraled, drinking heavily, haunted by nightmares, and even considering ending my life. Eventually, I moved to a new city to start over. After months of struggle, I reconnected with James, a college acquaintance, who introduced me to Derek. Together, we started a consulting firm. They became my lifeline. With therapy, work, and gym training, I began rebuilding myself. By 2018, I had regained stability, even changing my last name to Derek's with his blessing, as his family treated me like one of their own. In 2019, I met Kim, a half-Korean, half-Italian woman who worked at a coffee shop. Unlike others, when I told her about my past, she did not run away. Instead, she trusted me and gave our relationship a chance. We fell in love, traveled together, and later she launched her own food business. In February 2023, Kim told me she was pregnant. A few days later, I proposed, and she accepted. Life finally seemed good again, but in May 2023, Amanda called me, apologizing. At first, I hung up, but when she called again, her fiancé, Mark, explained that she wanted to confess. We met with my lawyer, and Amanda revealed the truth. She had been dating Henry in 2015, and he convinced her to help ruin me. They faked screenshots using my picture and framed me. She admitted she was manipulated, and Mark had pushed her to come clean after she drunkenly confessed. I was furious, but I kept control, thanks to Kim. My lawyer confirmed I had enough for a defamation suit, but I chose to postpone until after my wedding. Later, Jenny reached out to me for the first time in 8 years. She had met with Amanda and finally realized the truth. She apologized, sobbing, and told me she was devastated by her mistake. She admitted she married Henry after our divorce, that they had a daughter together, but now their marriage was falling apart. I told her I would only co-parent Alice and Sarah, our daughters, and had no interest in reconciliation. I also made it clear my parents were no longer my parents, no matter what apologies they sent. Despite my anger, I agreed to meet my daughters. Kim, being strong-willed, insisted on joining me. When we met in a public park, Jenny tried to hug me, but I refused and introduced Kim as my wife. Seeing Alice and Sarah after 8 years brought me to tears. They were conflicted, having only known Henry as their father, but they embraced me. I told Jenny I wanted to start family therapy with them and eventually spend weekends together. I was determined to rebuild my relationship with them, even if it would take time. Now I am left with difficult decisions. Do I confront my parents for closure? Do I go after Henry with a lawsuit, knowing he has a daughter who could suffer because of his actions? I want justice, but I also want peace. My therapist says I need closure, but I am torn between rage and the desire to finally live free of their shadows. What I do know is that I have Kim, our unborn child, and the chance to rebuild my bond with Alice and Sarah. That gives me strength. Story 8. This story involves me, a 28-year-old man, my now ex-girlfriend Elise, who is 27, and her two best friends Leah, who is also 27, and David, who is 27 as well. Elise and I had been together for 3 years and living together for 1.5 years. Our relationship was strong, we were in love, and people around us often said we were the perfect couple. We communicated well, had plans for our future, and everything seemed to be falling into place. I had told her I would not marry her until I had a job that could support a family, and she agreed. 2 months ago, I finally got that job, and together we began planning the next steps of our life. Marriage within a year or two, buying a house, and eventually having children once we had more financial stability. Elise even started dropping hints that she wanted me to propose. I was already preparing to, so I began researching rings, venues, and the perfect way to do it. This is when I reached out to Leah and asked her to meet in secret. I shared my plans, and she reassured me that Elise would love it. She also gave me some great suggestions. Leah brought David into the plan as well, since the three of them had been best friends since childhood, and together they helped me pick the ring. The plan was to rent a cabin in nature, because Elise loved being surrounded by the outdoors. I booked it, and the idea was to propose there. On Friday, I took the day off without telling Elise and met with Leah, David, and one of my friends to set up. I gave specific instructions to my friend, who would go back the next day before us to prepare everything with flowers and cameras. Afterward, I returned home, ordered Elise's favorite food, and spent the evening with her as usual. Leah had invited Elise for brunch on Saturday at a new fancy place, which was actually the proposal location. She emphasized how fancy it was so Elise would dress up without suspicion. On Saturday morning, Leah and David came to pick her up. Once they left, I met up with my friend, who was waiting nearby, and then checked in with the friend at the cabin. He told me everything was set exactly as I wanted. I had also asked David to share their location and stall for an extra 10 to 15 minutes, but he had not shared it. I thought it was fine. I rushed to the cabin, changed into my suit, checked the camera angles, and everything looked perfect. Then I waited. The drive should have been 30 to 40 minutes. But they still had not arrived. I waited another 20 minutes, now worried. It had been over an hour since they left. I asked my friend to call David and ask casually how much longer they would be. No answer. They tried Leah. No answer. I tried both of them. No answer. Finally, panicked, I called Elise. She did not answer the first time. The second time, Leah picked up. I immediately asked if everything was okay and why no one was answering. Leah was silent for a moment, then she exploded. She yelled that I should never call Elise again, that I was dead to her, that I was a horrible person, and that Elise never wanted to see me again. Then she hung up. I was in shock, confused, and I broke down crying while my friends tried to console me. Soon after, Leah texted saying she and David would come by later to collect Elise's belongings, that Elise would not even step inside the apartment again. Desperate for answers, I called Elise's parents. They knew about the proposal, and we were supposed to join them for lunch afterward. They were completely confused. They promised to call Elise and find out what was going on. 10 minutes later, they called me back, saying they spoke to her, but she told them she could not talk and would explain later. They were just as baffled as I was. Later that evening, Leah and David showed up at the apartment to take Elise's things. They refused to talk to me, only asking where her belongings were. They said they would be back for the rest and repeated that if I tried to contact Elise, they would report me for harassment. That crushed me even more, being accused of harassment when I had always loved and respected her. After they left, my friends insisted on staying the night so I would not be alone. We talked until 4 in the morning, but I could not sleep. I lay awake, replaying everything and trying to understand. I kept searching for explanations. The only one I could imagine was that Elise might have been unfaithful, realized I was about to propose, and panicked, telling her friends some twisted version of events to escape. Even that theory does not fully make sense, but it is the only explanation that came to mind. Today should have been the beginning of our engagement, the happiest day of our lives. Yet instead, I am left devastated, alone, and without answers. I am hoping that her parents will be able to talk to her and help me understand what truly happened, because right now I feel completely blindsided and broken. Story 9. I am frustrated that he now wants to rebuild a relationship with my daughter after being absent and no contact for 4 years, showing almost no interest in her from the time she was born until the year 2020. Part of me wants to ignore him, but I know that if I do not allow my child to decide for herself, it will be twisted and used against me, painting me as a horrible mother. Many years ago, I had a one-night stand with a married man, and it resulted in a pregnancy. At that time, I was a 24-year-old recently divorced single mother of two, living on my own for the first time. I was lonely and vulnerable, and I let myself be drawn to the attention this man gave me. When I told him I was pregnant, I asked him not to tell anyone because I was still unsure of what I was going to do. Instead, he told his wife immediately and spread it to all of our mutual acquaintances. I was a new Christian back then, trying to learn the Bible, and I already carried so much shame, so having my church friends find out made it worse. For weeks, I was humiliated, and my then pastor publicly shamed me on Mother's Day by preaching about a Jezebel spirit and calling me out to pray the evil out of me. That was the beginning of my religious deconstruction. The next year, I gave birth to a baby girl. No one came to see me at the hospital. I never had a baby shower. Because I was facing 7 weeks out of work, I had to move back in with my parents with all four of us so that we could survive. Fast forward 3 years, I was struggling financially, so I filed for child support. Not long after, I found myself in front of a judge to determine payments and visitation. That man stood there and told the judge he wanted to sign away his rights because he didn't want to have anything to do with that kid. I cried hearing that, not understanding how any parent could say something so cruel. The judge granted me sole custody and ordered him to pay 2.5 times the normal percentage, since I would have her full time. I was given full authority to decide if visits would ever take place. When my daughter turned 6, I allowed visits to begin. The visits followed the standard arrangement. Every other weekend, 1 month in the summer, and shared holidays. But they abruptly stopped in March of 2020 when the pandemic began. He texted me that it was not safe for her to visit and cut off contact. 3 days ago, I received a message from him saying that he was sorry and wanted to rebuild his relationship with her. I told him that if it were up to me, he would never get that chance until she was an adult, but I would allow her to decide for herself. She said, "What's the point? He doesn't even know me, and I don't want to be around a stranger." He texted me again a few hours ago, and I plan to respond by saying that the decision is not mine, that she does not want to share her number with him, and that I will not let him force his way into her life if she does not want it. Still, I need to phrase my reply neutrally so that it cannot be used in court to attack my character. For context, child support was set in 2015 at $260 per month, and I have never asked to have it increased. He usually pays only once every 5 months. My daughter has no interest in him, and she is old enough to tell a judge her own feelings if this escalates. I work full-time and have provided stability while he jumps from job to job, earning only minimum wage. In the past few years, I have learned how to advocate not just for my children, but also for myself. I can speak facts without letting emotions take over. But this situation hit me out of the blue, and I am worried that father's rights in Texas might work against me, despite all the years I have raised her alone. Storyton. When you finish reading this, you may decide that I am a psychopath, a coward, or a manipulator. You may be right. I am guilty, and I do not expect forgiveness or support. I did something I never thought I was capable of, and it is destroying me. I was blind, I did not listen, and I did not stop. I did not even recognize it as rape until she confronted me months later. I need to tell someone neutral, so I am writing this to strangers online. I am confused about who I am and what I should do. We have already gone to the police. I say we because she asked me to come with her, and I did. She made her statement while I sat there waiting. She has said she does not want to prosecute right now because she is compassionate and somehow still cares about me, but I will soon be called in for a voluntary interview. She asked for counseling for both of us and a restorative justice meeting with a professional mediator. I should not get away with what I did, and I am desperate for a way to make it right. I am terrified of prison, yet I know I deserve consequences. She has every right to change her mind and press charges, and I am afraid. I raped my ex-girlfriend last year. We were together for 3.5 years. We broke up a couple of months later, mutually, because we were not happy anymore. I moved out, but she wanted to stay friends. For a while, we still met up every few weeks, and sometimes we had consensual S, which was even better than before. Eventually, that ended when a friend told me to give her space. I have had mental health issues all my life, depression and anxiety, and when I hit a crisis a month later, I called her. She suggested we meet at a bar to talk. We both drank. That night, she told me she was having nightmares. I asked why. She said, "Remember the day I cried after S? That's the nightmare I keep having." That is when it hit me. I remembered the day. She was sad. I wanted S. I thought if I could make her feel wanted, it might cheer her up. I do not remember her saying no. I only remember her crying afterward, and I knew then that I had done something wrong, but I never let the word rape cross my mind. We continued our relationship as if nothing had happened, though unease grew. We cooked together, said, "I love you," and sometimes had good S, but that moment stayed inside her, silently damaging her. When she finally told me, it floored me. Later that night, she got drunk, so I took her back safely to the house we once shared. A few days later, she reached out again, wanting to try friendship. That night, we also ended up drunk, and she kissed me. We slept together again. A week after her revelation, I went to a doctor and got antidepressants. 2 weeks later, she asked me to lunch. That evening, she told my sister, who she is close to, about what happened. My sister wanted to talk. I promised both of them I would never do anything like that again to anyone. The next day, she asked me to go to the police to confess. I agreed. The day after that, I told my mother. I told her the basics, and she revealed that my father had done the same to her. He was the man I had sworn as a child never to be like. Now, her friends hate me. My mother and sister are angry and disappointed. I feel like I should confess to my friends too, but I am afraid of losing them. A mutual friend asked what had happened, and my ex told her it was something for me to say. I confessed, and that friend was horrified. She told me that even if my ex chooses not to prosecute, justice is not served unless I am arrested and sentenced. She said that continuing to accept my ex's invitations for S is stopping her from healing. When I asked my ex why she still wanted to sleep with me, she said that maybe good experiences with me would eventually replace the trauma. I do not know if that makes sense, but I know my friend was right. I deserve prison. I should not be allowed to continue life as if nothing happened while she bears the trauma I caused. I want to make it right, but I cannot undo what I did. I am afraid of losing everything, my freedom, my career, my family, but none of that compares to what I stole from her. Most of my moments alone are spent confronting my crime, facing what I did and trying not to minimize or excuse it. I can never fully imagine her pain, but I know I inflicted it. I cannot forgive myself. I can only hope there is a way to atone, even if that means losing everything. Story 11. First, I should give some context. I am a man in my mid-20s, and I am a closeted bi. All of my experiences with men have been through hookup apps like Grindr. I come from a Muslim background, and I am moderately devout. I am certain none of my family or friends suspect anything, and I intend to keep it that way. Every time I have met with a man, I have felt dirty and regretful afterward, promising myself I would never do it again. But over the past 2 years, the shame has lessened, and I have become more and more promiscuous. About 10 days ago, I realized how far I had fallen. I met 5 men in 1 week. I had the week off from college, and with my roommate away, I was spending up to 12 to 16 hours a day scrolling, messaging, and bringing strangers over. One of those times, I contacted a man whose profile made it clear he was into spanking. I told him I wanted him to punish me in the manner described in Islamic law for fornication. No sexual contact, only punishment. Unlike the religious version, though, I wanted to be stripped naked. I even sent him a religious ruling that explained the punishment. He said he preferred a domestic style of spanking, over the knee with hands, a slipper, or a hairbrush, rather than a whipping. I accepted, hoping this might break my cycle of addiction. I need to be clear. I am not into spanking, not into BDSM. This was not about kink. This was about punishment for what I saw as my sins and a desperate hope that I could stop. I know very well that conversion or aversion therapy has no evidence, and I know it is controversial ethically, but I was panicking and felt I had to do something drastic before I lost complete control or my secret was discovered. When I arrived, I met him outside his very expensive hotel. He was a white man in his mid-40s, stocky, and he asked me if I was sure I wanted to go through with it. I said yes. We had trouble getting back inside, and when the doorman let us in, I am sure he assumed it was just a hookup, but at that point I no longer cared what people thought. Inside his room, the man interrogated me about why I had let myself commit sodomy in the past. Then he put me over his lap and spanked me. First with his hands, then with a slipper, and then with a hairbrush he pulled from his suitcase. It hurt far more than I expected. Tears rolled down my face, but I stayed silent while the loud slaps echoed around the hotel room. Then came a knock at the door. The man whispered for me to face the wall, and he froze in silence until whoever it was walked away. I assumed it was a guest from the next room who had been disturbed by the sound, since it was around midnight. He finished by whipping me with a belt several times and then told me to get dressed and leave. I went home, fell asleep, and woke up the next day sore, covered in marks but with no broken skin. And yet, I still had not deleted my Grindr account. I found myself scrolling again, looking for another hookup, as if nothing had changed. That is when I decided to install accountability software on every one of my devices. I asked the man who spanked me to be my accountability partner. I had heard of the software before, but had no friend or family member I could trust to help me. He agreed. For the past week, he has been receiving reports of my flagged activity, alerts triggered not by all browsing, but by apps and offensive words. I have not watched pornography or used hookup apps since I set it up, but a few alerts, like profane comments I left on YouTube, were flagged and he demanded explanations. Now I am even writing this in private browsing on a friend's laptop, because if I wrote it on my own devices, it would have been flagged. Next week, I am supposed to meet him again at a different hotel for further punishment and interrogation. I am torn. On one hand, I feel like I have regained control. No porn, no endless hookups, no spiraling. On the other, I still feel that overwhelming urge to be punished for my past behavior, as if I cannot move forward without it. I fear that if I tell him I only want accountability and not punishment, he will end the arrangement. For now, I am stuck between the relief of having some structure back in my life and the guilt that still drives me to want more pain as a form of cleansing. Story 12. I was never supposed to live this long. I never imagined myself past the age of 25, and now here I am, almost 30. Since my early teens, I thought life would end for me young. My only plans were to finish school, maybe travel, perhaps even get married, and then I would be gone. But life did not follow my script. My brother was diagnosed with cancer, and he died. Suddenly, I realized I could not leave, not after seeing my mother bury one of her children. Nothing is more unnatural than that. I will never forget her screams when the doctor told us that he had expired at 3:14 in the morning. I will never forget her rushing into my room around 2 in the morning, crying, saying we had to come quickly. I will never forget the nurses letting me sneak him out to see the roses and the waterfront. I will never forget the first time I saw my big brother truly cry when he woke up to find an accidentally placed do not resuscitate bracelet on his wrist. I will never forget his broken voice telling our mother he was not ready to die. I will never forget the nurse dragging me out of the room as he coded, holding me in the hallway as I sobbed, asking if he would be there in the morning. He was not. I will never forget him reciting Psalm 23, verse 4. And I will never forget watching my mother grieve. I knew then I could not put her through that twice. So I decided to stay alive, for her. Once she was gone, then maybe I would be gone too. At least that was the plan. But then life surprised me. I found love, and so did my mother. She is out there now, living her best life, finally free to do the things she could not while raising us. And I am here, falling in love with a man, growing with him, finding joy. None of this was supposed to happen. I only pursued higher education because it seemed easier than working full-time or running a business. Never because I was planning for a future. I did not think I had one. I never even built up my credit. My parents always supported me as long as I stayed in school and met certain conditions. I never thought about saving for retirement or building long-term stability because I assumed I would not be here. But now I am almost 30. I have love. I have family. I actually have a reason to plan for the future, and I do not know where to begin. This was never supposed to be the plan, and yet here I am, alive, with a future staring me in the face. Story 13. My girlfriend is 18, and I am 19. We have been together for 5 months, and when we first met, we fell for each other instantly. It felt like she was my soulmate, and we would talk for hours, never wanting to stop. She makes me so happy, and I love her deeply. Early in the relationship, she asked me about my past partners. I told her she was my second. She admitted I was her 17th, most of them one-night stands. At the time, I told myself it did not matter. I had only slept with one ex, while she had many partners before me. But I thought our love was what mattered. We promised to be honest, to keep no secrets. She explained she slept around because she was searching for love and acceptance. What hurt me wasn't the number itself. It was everything that came with it. She shared details I never wanted to know, confessions that left me unsettled. She spoke of choices she later regretted and moments where she felt diminished or unsafe. Hearing it all was exhausting. It wasn't only her past that weighed on me. It was the way she laid it out, as though I had to bear the burden with her. Hearing this made me feel sick. I told her she should not have shared so much of her past because it made me see her differently. I started to think she had no self-respect, that she gave herself away too easily. I told her that if she ever cheated, I would leave. The thought of her being with all those men consumed me. I was disgusted by the idea of her with them, and I let that anger and insecurity drive me to have AS with her repeatedly, trying to reclaim her in some way. We even had to use the morning after pill the next day. Still, she told me that being with me was different. She said ES with me was the best she had ever had, that I made her pass out from pleasure, something none of her exes had done. She said she never liked giving oral S before me, but now she loved doing it for me. She said she even enjoyed anal with me because it felt good, unlike her past. She grew bold, wanting to try things with me she never had before. Public S, new experiences, all because she wanted me happy. She told me she had never been loved and cared for the way I love her. But despite her devotion, I could not silence the thoughts in my head. Her past haunted me. I felt like what we had was not special anymore, because she had already given herself to so many others. My mind filled with images of her with them, and it poisoned how I saw her. I told her how I felt, and it hurt her. She said she regretted her past and that she loved me. I wanted to accept it, but I could not. I went out drinking with friends to forget, and I ended up cheating with another girl. Then I started using dating apps and meeting other women, hooking up while still with my girlfriend. Eventually, I told her the truth. I had cheated multiple times and even had a friend with benefits. I told her she could leave if she wanted. To my surprise, she forgave me. She said she still loved me, even though I had hurt her. She said she understood that I was struggling to let go of the disgust I felt, and she stayed. Oddly, things became better after that. I no longer feel the same anger when I think of her past. I accept it. Other men were with her, but now she is with me, and that is what matters. I told myself that if I had not gone through those betrayals and mistakes, I might have broken up with her eventually, because I could not accept her past. Now I feel I can. I still see my friend with benefits, but I also appreciate my girlfriend more than ever. She has shown me love and forgiveness, despite my worst behavior. And I have learned that next time, I will never choose to date someone whose values on S differ so much from mine. But for now, I love her. I feel like I have a good woman by my side, and I am holding on to that. Story 14. I have secured an apartment for my baby and me, and I have prepared everything for custody, whether shared or not. I have divided the money, transferred my share to a separate account, and it will stay there until the divorce proceedings and the division of assets are finalized. I discovered that my husband was having an affair while I was postpartum. The pain nearly destroyed me. I loved him so deeply that it felt like my heart shattered into a million pieces. I knew our marriage was over, but curiosity consumed me. I wanted to understand why, what she had that I did not. Did he love her? I began reading his texts, and everything was there in black and white. He told her she made him feel alive again, that he was happy and excited with her. She was single and childless, with endless time to prioritize him, to make him feel seen and desired. It confused me, because even with all of life's distractions, I never stopped loving him. I made sure he knew every single day that he was my heart. Yet somehow it was not enough. I read thousands of their messages, and then I started doing everything he fantasized about with her. At first he seemed confused, but I pressed on. Every time he tried to make plans with her, I found a way to make him stay or ensured he was drained before he saw her. Over time, their messages dwindled. The passion faded. Soon, responding to her became a chore, and he started pulling away from her. At home, he was happier. He texted me sweet messages again, telling me he missed me, the way he used to. Slowly, he became himself again, the man I had fallen in love with. And then one day, the moment I had been waiting for came. He ended things with her. He told her he loved me, that he no longer needed her. I felt immense relief, like I could finally breathe again. But that relief did not erase the truth. I began preparing for divorce. He will receive the papers the same day I leave for my new life in my new apartment. I know some will say I share the blame, that I neglected him, that I pushed him into another woman's arms, that I could have given him what he wanted all along. Perhaps that is true, and I will carry that guilt forever. But in my defense, I did not mean to. My life had been turned upside down. I was navigating a new and overwhelming happiness of becoming a mother. I was also trying to understand my own body, one I barely recognized after childbirth. It was terrifying, but he never came to me. He never told me about his pain, never gave me the chance to understand. Instead, he chose deception. He betrayed me, us, everything we built. He ruined our love, our future, and even our history. Nothing will ever be the same again. Story 15. From late 1999 to early 2001, I lived a lie online. I pretended to be a man and spent every day exchanging emails with several women, most of whom wanted a relationship with me. I built an entire persona with a backstory so consistent that, at times, even I believed it. I targeted older women, women in their 40s and 50s I found on dating sites or through random instant messenger chats. Many were vulnerable, unemployed, in poor health, recently divorced, or simply seeking adventure. I never flirted, never became Sewell. But they trusted me, they admired me, and I love that. I love the attention, the flood of emails waiting for me, the sense that I mattered to someone. It eased the loneliness of being a 14-year-old girl in a new town, isolated, uninterested in typical teenage life. I told myself it was harmless, but deep down, I knew it was not. I gave this man a life, where he went to college, the jobs he had, the countries he traveled to, even the wallpaper in his childhood bedroom. His life was everything I wanted for myself, and people believed it. Some women wanted more than friendship, but whenever it crossed into romance, I pulled back. I always had an excuse, but then I met Pat. Pat was in her early 50s, living with her sister, drowning in debt, jobless, and miserable. She became my closest confidant. We talked every day through Instant Messenger. She was witty, smart, open to all my teenage musings, which I passed off as insights from a 50-something man going through an awakening. She trusted me completely. She told me things she said she had never told anyone else. I even mailed her seashells from a vacation in Florida, so the postmark would match the fake city where I told her I lived. She believed everything. But Pat wanted to talk on the phone. She wanted to meet. I avoided it for months, but eventually I went too far. I told her she could move in with me in Florida, that a friend of mine would give her a job. I even pretended to be that friend on the phone, conducting a fake job interview. I was only 15, terrified, but I was in too deep. The day came when she flew from Minnesota to Florida, believing she was about to start her new life. Our last conversation ended with her excitement and my false promises of balloons and a sign at the airport. I gave her a fake phone number, and then I disappeared. Her emails afterward were full of pain, disbelief, and desperation. The phone number led to a dry cleaner. The business address I had given her did not exist. She realized she had been duped, but she had no way home. She wrote from a library computer, saying she had enough money for only a few nights in a hotel. She had taken her first leap of faith in life, and I had crushed her. Her final messages were filled with shame and heartbreak. She pleaded for me to answer, to at least explain. I never did. I deleted the email account and buried the memory. I do not know what happened to her. To this day, the memory fills me with cold shame. I was a lonely teenager seeking attention, but that does not excuse it. I hurt someone deeply. I humiliated her. I led her on and left her stranded. Every time I think of it, I feel sick. Pat, wherever you are, I am sorry. I will always be sorry. Story 16. From a young age, I was seen as the family's prized child. Talented, polite, artistic, and intelligent. Praise seemed endless, but slowly, something shifted. I began to withdraw from my family, my friends, even my younger brother. People labeled me the quiet one, and no one ever asked why. Being left alone without anyone noticing created an opening I probably shouldn't have stepped through. It started with curiosity. I stumbled upon corners of the internet that felt secretive and intense. At first, I didn't even understand what drew me in, yet I kept going back. Soon, curiosity.
Hey, moms, it's Mandy here, mom of two wild, wonderful teenage boys who both just wrapped up their braces journey with Shirk Orthodontics. And let me tell you, their smiles are absolutely stunning. But what made me really fall in love with Shirk Orthodontics wasn't just the results. It was how easy they made the whole process for me as a busy mom. Best part, other than five convenient locations, is they offer a free exam. Go online and book today at yoursmilemaker.com.
Mention code BACKTOSCHOOLSMILE at your new patient exam and receive clear ceramic braces valued at $450. Free.
Everyone is welcome at the Big Table on Tuesday, October 21st. All across Central Ohio, people will join together to discuss important topics affecting our region. Don't miss your chance to be part of this community-wide day of inspiring conversations. Visit ColumbusFoundation.org to learn more about how you can participate. Together, we can inspire a culture of connection and kindness, one conversation at a time.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Became a desperate need for escape. I would stay up late, hidden under blankets, distracting myself even when others were nearby. I became skilled at pretending, living two separate lives, one that everyone could see, and another that remained entirely hidden. I once joined a global social platform and created a hidden version of myself. I shared only carefully chosen fragments, never revealing my true identity, yet enough to capture attention. People assumed I was older and more experienced than I really was. Within weeks, I had attracted thousands of followers. For the first time, I felt not just noticed, but genuinely valued. The feeling became addictive. I engaged with strangers while holding up a facade, constantly testing how far I could carry it. Offline, I remained the perfect child. Online, I was living a double life. Then came a turning point. I saw a video, different from the others. A boy in it said something simple but real, and it made me stop. For the first time in years, I looked in the mirror and felt ashamed. I wanted to change. I turned to faith, praying, fasting, reading, deleting everything. For a while, I felt free. That's when I met him. We connected online. He lived in another country, and we talked every day. I let him believe I was innocent, untouched, pure. I was in a spiritual phase and thought he was the one. But my mother found out I was talking to a boy and forced me to stop. I obeyed, though secretly, I still checked in. Over time, I saw his obsession, and one day I cut him off completely. For a year, I stayed clean, but one weak moment undid it all. One video pulled me back in, and this time it was darker. What once satisfied me no longer worked. I started chasing extremes. Not because I enjoyed it, but because the shock itself triggered something in me. I watched things that disgusted and scared me. I wanted to stop, but every time I tried, the craving dragged me back. On the outside, I was still the sweet, quiet daughter. I smiled, I laughed, I played my role. Inside, I was exhausted, hurting, and trapped. I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be this way. I am trying to stop, but I feel like I am drowning. Story 17. I never graduated from college. In fact, I barely made it through a community college semester before dropping out. Before the job I have now, the highest position I ever held was as a third key manager in retail. Eventually, I became unemployed, and the stress started crushing me. I was behind on rent and terrified I'd be evicted. One night, in a mix of panic and depression, I decided to create a fake resume. I gave myself impressive jobs I never had, a degree from a decent university, and even made up references. It was basically the perfect resume. As a joke more than anything, I submitted it to what I thought was a dream job, something way out of my league. Then came the interview. I honestly believed I'd bomb it, maybe get a funny story to tell my friends. But that's not what happened. That day, for reasons I can't explain, I was on fire. Everything I said landed perfectly. I clicked with the interviewers, answered every question flawlessly, and walked out feeling like I just nailed the best performance of my life. And then, they offered me the job. I accepted, even though my stomach was in knots. The salary was almost triple anything I'd ever made before, about $60,000 a year. At the time, I thought, what's the worst that could happen? Maybe they'll figure it out after a week or two, and I'll at least have a paycheck or two to survive on. But that didn't happen. Not only did I keep the job, I excelled. I've now been promoted 4 times. That fake resume got me in the door, but my work since then has kept me here. Today I make over 6 figures, a number I never thought I'd even come close to. The wildest part? Before this job, my entire work history was just retail. That resume started as a desperate joke, but it snowballed into the career that changed my life.